It's been a hot minute since our last episode, and I want to apologise to those of you who were hanging out for our regular scheduled episode last week. I've been travelling up through South Australia along the Stuart Highway through to Uluru, Kings Canyon, Cutajada, and have finally arrived a week later in Uluru and in Alice Springs, rather. And so for any of you who have ever been through outback Australia, you know that phone reception and internet connection is pretty poor at times. So despite having the episode ready to go, I didn't like my chances of getting it uploaded. So hence the 1 week break, but we're back and we're firing on all cylinders. And I want to just make a quick point. Apologies if you can hear a little bit of background noise in these intros and outros. As I said, I'm currently in Alice Springs, so we've got road trains going past and all sorts of things. The life of a nomadic podcast host, hey? So look, before we kick off with the episode itself, there's a couple of things that I wanted to touch on, and I'm not a big fan of kind of doing a lot of promo in my intros, but I think you'll want to hear about these things. So the first thing I wanted to draw attention to was last week I had the pleasure of presenting and hosting the Live Free Academy's A Brush with the Law event. Now, for those of you who maybe still aren't fully clear on what exactly the Live Free Academy is, the Live Free Academy is an athlete, entertainer, and influencer development company. It is a sister project of both the Live Free movement, my mentality and peak performance coaching and consulting business, and also, of course, another aspect of the Live Free Group umbrella. Now, the Live Free Academy focuses on teaching athletes, entertainers, and influencers all the back end side of monetizing their chosen craft or their chosen pursuit. And as I said, last week we hosted A Brush with the Law, which was a purely athlete development focused event in which we were aiming to educate athletes, gym owners, and coaches on more of the legal aspects of being an athlete, of looking at things like, you know, how to ensure that you don't lose sponsorships through posting something silly on social media, or what you can and can't post on social media, as well as looking at things like insurance for gym owners, for coaches, for promoters, and a whole array of other legality aspects that I think a lot of people tend to step over. So that was a huge success. We had the likes of Alan Wong from Flinders Muay Thai, of course, Carly Gangel, owner of Pride Fight Series and Females Fighting Forward, as well as Pinky from Team Pinky Muay Thai and a whole array of other coaches and athletes. And the discussion that opened up was huge in terms of looking to the future and looking to really evolve and grow the South Australian and Australian combat sports scene. So given the response we had to that event, despite my upcoming move to the Gold Coast, as many of you know, and the fact that given that move, we were considering, you know, was it kind of viable to bring the academy back to SA? Given the response we had to that, we have decided, and the team is back hard at work, to host yet another The Live Free Academy event in November. So keep your eyes peeled, follow the page on both Facebook and Instagram by searching The Live Free Academy, and you can stay up to date on exactly when that event is and what exactly it is. So really amped about that one. Now, the other thing that I wanted to touch on for anyone in the Wollongong or Illawarra area, I am teaming up with an incredible woman named Lauren Darlington. Now, for anyone that's listened to previous podcasts, you will know who this lady is. She's a former client of mine. She's a badass. She's one of the women that I had the pleasure of working at Australasia's largest women's empowerment event. She, in the Gold Coast recently, alongside the likes of Lorna Jane, Ashie Bynes, Constance Hall, Maxine Horn, Naomi Simpson, huge, huge names. And this lady was the one that was responsible for kind of running all the back end side of this huge, huge event. So Lauren and I have decided to team up, and we're running an event called How to Create a Badass Life. Now, it doesn't get much more straightforward than that, really, in terms of what exactly the event is about. It's coming up on October 12th, and I'm going to run you through some of the dot points of what we'll be covering. So bear with me. So what you'll leave this event with is an empowering relationship with yourself and a deeper understanding into what self-love actually means to you, a new perspective on how you see your life and what makes you you, tools to optimize your life and live in alignment with what you're actually wanting to create, a clear vision on what you're wanting to create in your life and what it takes to do so, the ability to know how to do the things even with the fear coming up, an understanding of how to shift into a creative outcome mindset instead of seeing only problems, which, hey, been there, and a broader mindset on how you view the world, which then allows you to create and make new decisions in alignment with what you're actually wanting for yourself. So this will be your chance to work with both Lauren and I for a ridiculous price. It will be a small group, so it'll be very hands-on. You get a lot of one-on-one time. And as I said, you'll walk out being super clear on what you're gunning for in life and leave knowing where you're going next. And finally, for those of you who have been on the fence, super keen to work with me one-on-one, but don't really, you know, have the capacity, whether that be financially or time-wise, I've been thinking of you guys. And I've come up with a new program, which is starting up on October 6th, called Project Conquest. Now, Project Conquest is an online exclusive group. For the time being, I am taking on foundation memberships, which means an introductory price. This is a monthly subscription. And in a nutshell, what you'll be getting is weekly live video coaching calls on a variety of topics, depending on what's going on for the group as a collective. And along with that, a live Q&A. You'll get additional coaching calls when it's required to answer specific questions that seem to be coming through from the group. You'll get full-time access to both myself and all of the Live Free Movement's coaches through the group for all of your questions and ongoing support and needs. You'll also get discounted one-on-one coaching sessions through the group, group accountability, and a like-minded community, which we all know how friggin' important that is when you go on for your dreams. You'll get discounted tickets to all future The Live Free Movement events and programs, excluding collaboration events in some, but not all cases, and sneak peek access to all events and programs before public release. And of course, this group subscription is a no-locking contract, so you can cancel at any time. And it's going to be freaking epic. So if you want to jump on board for the introductory foundational price, now's your chance. Hit me up via social media. The quickest way is just shoot me a message on Facebook or Instagram by searching Brianna Bowley. That's BRIANABOWLEY. I'm super active on social media. I get back to every single message that does come through. If I don't get back to you straight away, double message me, triple message me, quadruple message me, but I promise I will get back to you. Now, finally, on to today's show. Now, I'm really amped to share today's episode. It's with someone who has had such a huge impact on the combat sports scene in South Australia and is largely responsible for the Muay Thai scene here in South Australia. Now, he's someone who tends to keep to himself, doesn't share his opinion, you know, on a public forum very often at all. So I feel like I'm kind of giving you guys the exclusive here. And I think in many cases, his opinion may vary from the majority, which is really cool because I'm a big believer that every fighter, every athlete requires something different. And as an individual, it's your responsibility to go out and figure out what that is, be it through trial and error, and find the right fit for yourself. So really amped to share a different perspective and also to give today's guest, Alan Wong of Flinders University Muay Thai, an opportunity to share more of who he is. Now, much of the first half of this episode, I wanted to just give Alan the opportunity to just share who he is. So much of it is him talking, which is epic. Just sit and sponge that up. But stick around to the end when we kind of have a little bit more of a backwards and forwards discussion about combat sports and Muay Thai and kickboxing more specifically, and where we'd like to see this sport go in the future. I do also want to just quickly explain a perspective that I touch on later because I know that this may come up at some point, and I probably didn't explain it quite as succinctly as I would have hoped listening back to the episode. Now, I touch on very quickly in the later half of the episode the Roman gladiatorial games and the studies I've been doing likening them to modern day combat sports. And what I wanted to note and what I failed to note during the episode is that I wholeheartedly understand that the gladiators in the Roman times were, of course, either slaves, so they weren't there voluntarily, or in some cases they were volunteers who, of course, as volunteers did not get paid. But what I do want to note, and this is where I draw a lot of likeness to modern day combat sports, is that the gladiatorial games were huge money-spinning games. They were considered the rich man's sport. So in many cases, in order to train a gladiator, there was huge, huge money going in terms of sponsorships. And the promotion of these games, from what I'm led to believe through my research, they were promoting these events throughout the city. You know, it was the talk of the town. There were posters of, you know, individual prized fighters and of course, you know, the audience had their favourites and they were plastered throughout the town. And so I think it's really important to note that despite, and again, of course, a very, very different era, but despite the nature of the sport being a blood sport, there was huge potential for massive money. And I think if we can take that perspective and take ideas and concepts from how it was once upon a time done, then we can start to really move the needle on what's available for modern day combat sports athletes and promotions and start to understand just how important it is marketing wise to promote and create sponsorship opportunities and to create further event opportunities, which results in further competition opportunities for the athletes. And in many cases, if you're not getting paid on the front end, I'm a big believer you should be getting paid on the back end. So what I mean by that is if you're not getting paid for the competition itself, then you should be getting paid through sponsorships. And I think that's where the gladiatorial games nailed it. So I hope that kind of clears up a little bit more of what I meant there. But I think for anyone involved in the combat sports scene or someone who's just curious, it's worth really looking into because these games were huge back in their day. And I think there's some wisdom in how it was done. So without further ado, as I said, really freaking amped to share this episode. Episode 83, I had to double check then. Episode 83 of the Live Free Experience podcast, joined by Alan Wong. Let's get this show on the road. All right, Alan Wong, how are we?
I'm fine. A bit tired from looking at the computer screen all day, but I'm fine.
Long day?
It's always a long day for me. you know, I mean, work, family, training, always long day. So, but anyway, that's how it is.
Yeah. All right, well, let's kick off straight away. I've already had the pleasure of hearing a little bit about your story of, you know, how you found Muay Thai, but do you want to start by sharing with the listeners, what got you started?
Well, first of all, when I was about seven years old, family's poor. Father had a food store on the roadside. Like you see in Asia, there's a lot of hawker stores. When we were kids, we are expected to help. Anyway, I was helping my father and mother at the store one night, and someone went and grabbed a chair from another table, and I went to say, "Hey, sorry, someone's sitting there," and the guy took offense to it, and I was a little kid, right? This guy is probably 18 years old, 17, 18 years old. He took offense to that and called up a few of his mates and bashed me. Literally hit the shit out of me. And my dad couldn't do anything because these guys are the local hoodlums, you know. And they're from a different race, and that's you know, race relations in Malaysia can be touchy sometimes. So that just sort of told his guys off. That's all he could do. He can't do much, even though he could have, you know, fought them and stuff. But if he started something physical with them, then the store would be burned down and God knows what's going to happen. Yeah. So Dad had to step away and then pull me aside after and say, look, you know, you need to learn how to fight. You need to learn how to defend yourself. So anyway, in those days, you know, there was a famous Kung Fu master in my area. So we went to see him and he took me on and I started training with him. I was thinking 7, 8 years old, yeah, started training with him and yeah, it went on for two, when I was about 14 or 15, I was training quite, you know, seriously, almost every day. I used to have to ride my push bike 10Ks one way to train and 10Ks back, but it's what I wanted to do. So anyway, to cut the story short, when I was about 14, and as I say, I was quite serious about martial arts, so I trained not only with this master of mine, by the name, his name is Wu Tuck Ming. He's a very famous guy. He was over 80 years old when he took me on, and wow. But he was super fit. It was unbelievable. He rode the push bike to training as far as I rode. Wow. every day, 6 days. 6 days a week. But anyway, I train every morning on my own on the playground across the road from my house. And anyway, I do it every morning. And then one day this guy walks past and looks at me and stood there and watched me train. And I just thought, oh, well, you know, someone's there watching me. Well, I must be good, you know. So anyway, went on for a few days. And then one day he approached me and he says, what are you doing? What's this? And I said, oh, this is Chinese Kung Fu. He says, oh, I'm interested, he says. So we started talking. He spoke quite good English. And I could, you know, obviously I was English educated, so I could speak good English as well. He couldn't speak Chinese, but anyway, we talked and he explained to me that he is Chinese, but he was born in Thailand. You know, probably second, third generation, God knows how long it was. And he says, I'm Chinese, but I know nothing about the Chinese culture. And he says, would you teach me? Would you help? You know, show me some of this Chinese Kung Fu stuff. I said, yeah, all right. So we started. And as we were training and I'm watching him move and I'm thinking, nah, this guy is not a freshie, you know, he knows something. So I asked him, he said, oh, no, you know, this is the first time I've done this, but I thought, but you're so strong, look at your arms, they're all sort of, you know. And he says, no, it's just from work, you know. And he was actually a supervisor in a small factory that's owned by a Thai businessman. And so I just sort of let it go for a bit, but then just curiosity got to me. So I hounded him every day to try and, you know, finally he gave up. He says, okay, all right, I'll be honest with you. Yes, I've done martial arts before, but what I did is the Thai martial arts called Muay Thai. And I thought, ooh, Muay Thai, I've heard about it. And I live quite close to the border of between Malaysia and Thailand, and there are a lot of Thais around the area, and you hear these things when you're kids, you're interested in what other people do. So I said, why don't you teach me some Muay Thai and I'll teach you Kung Fu. Yeah, all right. So he started teaching me a little bit, you know, the basic stuff, how to hold my hands up, how to move, you know, that kind of thing. And it got me more and more interested. And then he started telling me about stories about what he did. And it turned out that he had over 160 fights.
Wow.
Most of it in the province, in the south. He had a few fights in Bangkok. Wasn't very successful. Came back to the province and stayed and just fought in the provinces. And then But he obviously, you know, he's from a Chinese family and mum and dad don't like him doing that, so made him study. So anyway, he got educated, and I think something to do with engineering, I can't remember exactly, it's been a long time ago. And I remember his name is Somchai Hipatiyaku, something like that. But anyway, we kept doing, you know, I taught him stuff, he taught me stuff, and then eventually I just got really interested in this because it was a lot harder than what Kung Fu is. Kung Fu is just a lot of movement, a lot of this, and then I'm thinking, this is so much easier. So I pestered him, and then finally one that it became, he became my teacher. I didn't teach him anything after that. He was quite happy to train with me and stuff. We didn't have much then, you know, he didn't have any equipment, so we did what we could. Anyway, he took me over to across the border to where he lived, and in a small village, and took me to the camp where he used to train, which is, you know, pretty basic. The floor was basically dirt with things put with some sort of carpet over it, and the boxing ring was all run down. But it was enough, you know, it's a few bags, and so he started training me there. And, you know, I was still young, right? And I watched the Thai kids, and I thought, my God, these guys are unbelievable, you know. And anyway, that was the first turn. And then the next, I trained a bit more, and then the next visit, we went there again, and there was a festival happening in the village, and he says to me, "You want to have a fight?" And I'm thinking, well, maybe. Anyway, I did. It was a painful experience, a real painful experience. The kid I fought was younger than me, probably about a couple of years. By that time I was probably 16, and the kid was probably 14, maybe even 13 years old, lighter than me, probably about 10 kilos. Yeah. And we fought, and I think from what I heard at the end of it, that he's already had 50 fights, that kid, and this was my first fight. That's why I say it was a really painful experience, because I hit him as hard as I could, and he just smiled at me. And he hit me at the first kick he got me with, I was almost in tears. Anyway, I remember my trainer said to me, "You never show fear, you never show pain. All right, you try and smile." Anyway, so I tried, it was difficult. Anyway, first fight wasn't good, lost one of my tooth from an elbow because the mouth guard we had was just basically a piece of rubber to stick in your mouth, and got my head cut on the top with an elbow, blood everywhere. And anyway, I got 100 baht for it, you know, which is a lot of money for me then, I was a kid, you know. And that was my first experience. And then I did a bit more, and I have a total probably from memory about 15 fights maybe. Lost 5 and won 10, and after that decided enough.
Yep.
You know, this is not for me. This fighting is not for me. These guys are just too good. They've been training since they were 6, 7 years old, and I've just started. Mm-hmm. When I'm a teenager, so I will never beat them. You know, those that I beat are local Malaysian fighters like me, you know. So, because in the border between Malaysia, there's a lot of Thais, a lot of mixed Malay Thais, and the Malays also have a form of Thai boxing called Tok Muay, which is same, you know, really, they just call it Tok Muay. And so they have cross-border competition, stuff like that all the time. Anyway, so I decided now I want to study, you know, I use my brain rather than my fist, you know. So anyway, I decided to study and head down, ass up, got through my A-levels and applied to come to Australia, and this when I got here, I had to do something. I had to continue some sort of martial arts training. So I decided to start a small club called the Flinders University Shaolin Kung Fu Club, because that's what I know best, right? Muay Thai didn't exist here then. Mm-hmm. And so we started with four or five guys, charged them $1 each to train, and you know, and slowly the, you know, the numbers got bigger and bigger. And then the people from the Bob Jones Corporation started organizing. Oh, I had my last fight in Australia, by the way.
Oh, okay.
That was
here in South Australia.
In South Australia, yep. Yes. While I was training, and some guy that I know quite well decided to be a promoter, and he promoted a kickboxing. It wasn't Muay Thai, it was kickboxing, because like I said, Muay Thai didn't exist.
Yeah.
So he says, oh, you know, you want to have a go, because he heard that I used to do Thai boxing on Muay Thai. And he says, you want to have a go? I said, oh, well, yeah, why not, you know? Oh, you know, you fight as a professional, we'll pay you some money. I said, how much? He said, $500. I said, oh, yeah, all right. Being a poor student, $500 is a lot of money.
And
so I took the fight. I was about 75 kilos then. And the guy that I fought was like probably at least 5 kilos heavier than me. All right, because, you know, he couldn't find an opponent, and no one wanted to fight me, and he says, I'll fight him. So anyway, it happened. But that was a big mistake, because he was just way too tall and way too big for me.
Yeah.
The fight only lasted probably just over half a round, because he managed to kick his leg underneath my armpit and pop my shoulder.
Oh, ouch.
And he was big, he was heavy. I mean, I was playing with him, because I was quicker, I moved around, I kept tipping him and, you know, pushing him away, and then all of a sudden he came in and threw this kick. I kept my hands up to try and protect my head, and it went underneath my arm and popped my shoulder, and it went, ugh. Anyway, that was it. That was the end of it. And then I'm thinking, nah, it's not worth it. My mom and dad would kill me if they knew what I'm doing here. So I was like, so I continued just training. And that's when kickboxing started to pick up, because the Bob Jones Corporation had shows, and I started training fighters, put them in the kickboxing shows, and that's how it all started. And then eventually it became Muay Thai, because that's what I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I started teaching it. Yeah, and the rest is history.
There you go.
That's how it all got started with Flinders.
Wow.
And you know, with us people, I suppose sorry that I'm
picking all right. Over I'm just sponging it up. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, in those days, like I said, it's just mostly kickboxing. Yeah. People who fought then are just tough. Mm-hmm. They skill-wise, not much.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching or putting my guys against some guys, and all it is a brawl.
Mm-hmm.
All right, punches coming from every single direction, hardly any kicks, and it is just a brawl. And then I slow, and I step back, and I say, just this is not right. You know, to me, being strong, big, doesn't always win you the fight, but being technical is what would mostly win you, well, 90% of the time would win you the fight. So I started to be a bit more methodical with my training when I trained the guys. I mean, I wasn't an experienced trainer, by the way, you know, it's just something that I started doing, and you learn. And along the way, I meet a lot of people, and one of my mentors, and I have to mention this man, he's from New Zealand, and his name is, we call him Lolo, all right, Lolo Hemuli. I met him in can't remember, in the 1980s in New Zealand, when I took a couple of my fighters over to New Zealand to compete. And just watching his fighters, we actually fought against his fighters, watching his fighters, how they fought, and that reminded me of what I used to do back in Thailand or in Malaysia. And I'm thinking, that's what I want to teach.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And we spend a lot of time talking, and he's one of those guys that is would know everything about every fighter that he's interested in, you know, how they fight. And I just listened to him, and I learned so much just from watching this guy train people and listening to how he trains people. And that's when it sort of made me more of more trainer, a wholesome trainer.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm starting to realize that I don't know anything. I know nothing compared to these guys out there. So I sponge of them, I learn from them, I talk to them, and we became really good friends. We're still in touch, all, you know, every time if you don't know who he is, a few years ago, Mark Hunt was here fighting in the UFC.
Yes, yep.
He's Mark Hunt's trainer then.
Ah, okay.
Right. So we met up here when he was here, and we went out for dinner. So it was good to, you know, he always sort of inspires me. You know, he's this very clever man. He's very, he picks everything. He picks mistakes of this fighter, and that's how he wins his fight, because he knows what these guys do. And so when his fighter fights them, he knows exactly what needs to be done. So I try and learn and do that, which is very difficult. But, you know, he's my mentor. I'm sure he'd say, no, I'm not. But, you know, he is. I really look up to him. And so in those days, the early days of Muay Thai in Adelaide, in South Australia, is that's one club that everyone looks up to, and that's Flinders. Now, I'm not just saying it because I think so. I've heard a lot of people say this. In fact, in one of the podcasts from another group of people I was listening to the other day, and that's exactly what they say. In those days, if you fight one of the Flinders boys, oh my God, you're going to be in for a fight.
Yeah.
So, not because we're better than anyone, it's because we're different. I try to be very technical when I, you know, if I can. I mean, not every fighter can be technical, all right? I mean, I'm sure you've heard people like Pinky say, you get the really technical guys that you can't touch them because they're so clever.
Yeah.
And then you get those guys that just goes hands up, goes in, and bang, all right? So, and we're somewhere in between, all right? I love to be 100% technical, but it's very difficult. You know, you either have it or you don't.
Yeah.
So you really can't teach that. You can teach them all the techniques in the world. And anyway, we were the benchmark, I suppose. I mean, you know, talking to Pinky's old trainer, we used to talk a lot. You know, he used to ring up and, you know, try and ask me things. And he says that you guys are the benchmark. We look up to you. We want to, you know, and you know, which was fantastic in those days. But sooner or later, you know, people will start to catch up with you. You know, they're going to be sort of breathing down your neck, and then you try and move further ahead and stuff, which is good. So it gives us a challenge. And I suppose with that push, I used to have 15 to 20 fighters in one go. I have people like, you know, in my first ever champion is a guy called Dave Allen. He was a featherweight, tough as nails, fit as anything. He used to run to work. He lives in Mitchell Park. He used to run to Rundle Street. anyway, that area, yep. Where that's where he works, right?
Wow.
And if he can't run, he'll ride his push bike, and he's so fit, he's ridiculously fit, tough. And then he was my first Aussie champion, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get, because of him, we get a lot of other guys come through, and there's a few islanders I used to train, and they are tough.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then you got people like in those days, you know, who are they? The names like the Bujaya brothers, Ray Bujaya and Lawrence Bujaya, and they are tough as nails. So it's all about toughness in those days, you know, how tough you are and how much punishment you can take and give back.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly, you know, I've got people like Sam Harvey, Ethan Shep, you know, they all trained with me, and I took them to a certain level, and then here comes this young Polish dude. who is at that time, his stepfather is a good friend of mine, and he brought him over to my house, and he saw my trophies, and he says, "Oh, what's this?" And I told him what it's all about, and he said, "Oh, he wants to train, so you come." So anyway, he came, you know, used to pick him up, take him to training because he had no transport, his mom didn't have any transport. And he became Paul Slovinsky, right? It's good, you know, he was young, stubborn, as usual, most Polish guys are. But he wanted it, he wanted it, he had that grit. And he says to me one day, I remember this very clearly, he says, "Alan, I'm not good at study, but I got this." He showed me his fist. He says, "I want to be world champion." I said, "Sure, try." It was hard to push him because, he can be, like I say, he can be stubborn. Once he gets his mind stuck on something, it's hard to change his mind. But anyway, we got him there eventually. He won 4 different world titles from the WMC, 4 different weight divisions. I think it was cruiserweight, heavyweight, super heavyweight and light heavyweight as well. So he got 4 different world titles in different weight divisions, and then he got into the K1 and stuff. But Paul is, he can be technical if he wants to, but he's also tough.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to change his style because I don't want him to get hit too much, because mm-hmm. as you know, fighting big boys, you know, they've got big power shots, especially with their hands, especially in the K1. When he started to get into the K1, I was really worried that he might get badly hurt. But anyway, he moved on and, you know, went to Holland and trained with Ernst de Hoest. And so he continued fighting for a few years after he came back. Yeah, and I think it's decided not to continue anymore, because I think he's had over 100 fights now.
Mm.
So it's not easy on the body. So he decided, that's it, I'm done. And, we see each other every now and again, we talk. Always talk about old times and stuff. So it's good. And I think it was basically my last champion, good fighter, and after that I just sort of started to back off a bit, because I spend a lot of time training these guys, and most people don't know. They look at my club, I've got 30 to 40 people training in one night, they think I'm a millionaire. I'm not, all right, because I don't take the money from the club. The money goes into the club. I get the perks. I get to travel with them. I get to, you know, when I go to Thailand, the club pays for me to go, because, you know. So I get the perks, but I don't get the money. I don't get money in my pocket.
Yeah.
The money we use for equipment. Now, if I told you how much we charge the club, $5 a lesson.
Yeah.
For 2 hours training. You know, it's like, I say, it's not about the money for me, because I'm passionate about this, what I do. And that's why I get along so well with Pinky, because Pinky is also passionate about what he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. The difference between me and Pinky is I have a job. I have a job that pays good. So I don't need the Muay Thai to be my, you know, income, right? Pinky is different. Pinky has to have an income. He can't do this for nothing.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I don't sort of look down on people who does this for a living. If you have a skill, use it. Yeah, fine, make it. But the thing with Pinky is, even though it's a business for him, he's passionate. He's very passionate about what he does.
Absolutely.
We talk a lot. We, you know, he can be a clown sometimes, which is fine with me. You know, I never used to like Pinky. I say this, I say this in public, and he knows that. And but from what he's done in Thai and Muay Thai, like going to Thailand and living there with nothing, living off one meal every 3 days, and still able to and fight to survive and take on fights anywhere, anytime. And I'm thinking to myself, this guy wants to achieve something. And that's why my whole attitude towards him changed. And also, and we became really, really good friends. I mean, he called me his father, you know. In fact, I was his father when he was ordained as a monk in the Thai temple up in Milo. And he was so grateful for me to be there to, you know, do that with him. But he's one of these guys that I can sit down all day and talk to him about Muay Thai. And that's my passion. And that's why I don't use this as an income stream. Because I have a skill, which is computers. So that's my business. That's what I do for a living.
Yeah.
The Muay Thai is my passion. Yeah, and I love training people. I always say to people who comes and train with me, if you want to learn, I will teach you. But if you want to come and kick the tires and test the waters out, I'm not interested. So I say I have one rule in my club. You want to train, you train hard. You know, people say, oh, should I call you Master or should I call you? I don't know. You call me Alan. I don't need these titles. For what? For me, because of my passion, you know, a lot of the old martial arts people demand the respect. They walk into a room and they demand people look at them and bow to them and call them all sorts of titles and stuff. I don't do that. That's not me. You know, because I think this is not just, not because of my martial arts background, it's because of my upbringing. My dad always said you have to respect people. And if you want to you want respect, you have to earn it. So my belief is you don't force people to call you crew or master or ajahn. If they want to call you that, fine. That means they have respect for you. But if you force them to do it, so, you know, what's the point? All right? So everyone, all my students calls me Alan.
Yeah.
All right? All of them. They don't call me by, you know, they don't call me master or crew or ajahn. The only person that calls me ajahn is Pinky.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because he shows me a lot of respect, and I show him the same, you know. So that's me, you know. People who doesn't know me might think that I'm abrupt. Yes, I am. I am abrupt, especially when you try and talk to me at a fight night. You know, I'm trying to prepare my fighters and you come in, oh, you know, this and that. I'll just say, go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but outside of that, if you want to talk to me, I'll be happy to sit down and talk to you. All right. And, you know, that's me. That's who I am. You know, some people just don't get it. Some people think that I am just a hard bastard, really, because they see how I talk to my fighters in the ring. You know, in the old days, I used to slap them. I used to squirt water at them when they're not listening, when they're not concentrating on their fight. I don't slap them. I just give them a smack in the chin and say, wake up, come on, you know. And people see that as something bad? Maybe. I can understand. Yes, no one likes to be slapped. Yeah. But me, I do that not because I want to degrade them. I do that because I want to wake them up. Because when you're talking to them, and you can see when you're talking to a fighter, their eyes are looking at you and it's blank.
Yeah, yep.
And when that happens, I have to wake them up because they're not listening, they're not absorbing, they might be nodding their head, you know, they just don't get it. So, Pinky does the same. I think he learned it from me, I think. So it's, that's my method, you know. You know, people say to me, oh, don't you worry about what people say? Well, no, I don't. Unless it's a law against slapping your fighter, I will continue doing it if I need to, you know? I mean, I'm not gonna slap them hard, you know, just give them a tap, wake them up, squirt water, cold water at their face to make them jump and, you know, so things like that. So, I just, you know, I hear things from people, oh, it's too hard, I don't want to train with him, and things like that. Yeah. You should try it.
Mm.
You should try it, you know? You know, I have a young girl that I train with me here. She's a really, you know, she started training with me when she was about, oh, I can't remember, probably about 5-6 years old. Then she went back to England. Then she came back again. She started back again about 6 months ago. She was helping out at one of the orientation week here at uni, helping out, you know, deliver a set, sort of hand out pamphlets and stuff. And some people come and say, oh, I really like to train Muay Thai, but I'm too scared of Alan Wong. He yells at people. And this girl looked at him and said, he only yells at you if you're stupid. You know, that see, these guys that I train, they know what I'm doing, they understand.
Yeah.
So it's a different thing. You know, people who's never tried, never trained with me, thinks that I'm just too hard. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know. You, whatever you do, as you know, you've done martial arts. What is the point of doing things 50%?
Exactly, yeah.
If you want to do something, even though you don't want to be a fighter, you have to set yourself some goals.
Mm.
All right, you have to set goals. You have to aim for something, achieve something. And if you don't do that, then you might as well just do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's my view about things. And that's why fighters comes along, or people who wants to fight will come along and say, and the first thing I'll say to them is, you sure you want to do this? I said, you know what? If you want me to train you to fight, this is my rule. Your ass belongs to me. And they look at me, what do you mean? Well, that means you're expected to train harder than anyone here. You're expected to do your run, your sprints, your strength and conditioning work,
mm-hmm.
with or without me. And you do as you're told. Those who accepts it would achieve something. Those who don't, they'll give up.
Mm.
So you soon weed them out. You know who can handle it and who can't. You know, people say, oh, you're too hard on people, and that's why they don't continue to fight anymore. And I'll look at them and I'll say, I'm hard. Say, if you jump into the ring, what do you think the guy in front of you is going to do to you?
That's it.
He's not
table
gonna,
tennis.
Yeah, it's not lawn bowls, you know? He's going to try and knock your head off. And if you think I'm hard, that's hard. If I don't prepare you mentally, how are you going to handle that physically? So, you know, I think it's just different perspective.
Yeah.
People see things differently.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to say it, but people these days are, how can I say, the young people these days are been wrapped in cotton wool too much.
Yeah, I probably agree with that. Bubble wrap, yep.
Everything has to be kind. Everything has to be, oh, you can't say that to them.
Mm-hmm.
You will hurt their feelings. Hang on. Have they been out into the real world yet? No. Wait till they get out to the real world.
Yeah.
Wait till they have to fight for a position in employment. Wait till they go into a big organization and working with different people. If they're not prepared, they're just going to fall to pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that's what I do. I try and prepare the young guys that trains with me to go out into the boxing, go into the boxing ring 100% ready.
Mm-hmm.
Not 50%, not 75%, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And that hopefully would translate into his life, his general life, because they become tough mentally, they become strong in their heart, they want to be, they are able to achieve, they have goals, you know, that sort of stuff. Hopefully that would help them in their lives. In fact, there's, you know, I mean, I've got heaps of examples of people whose parents actually come and thank me for doing what I do for their kids, especially some that are pretty, you know, bad kids. And all of a sudden they become disciplined, they don't smoke, they don't drink, they do their exercises every day, and they're totally different people, you know? And then I have people who are depressed. And I had one guy who's still training with me. It's been quite a lot of years now. And he was on medication. And he put on a lot of weight because of the medication. He came and trained. He probably lost 30, 40 kilos.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his first fight. And his father was in tears after the fight. He came to me and he says to me, Alan, I thank you so much. You saved his life.
Wow.
And that is my reward.
Mm.
Not winning world titles, not. That's my reward.
Mm-hmm.
People who appreciate what I do.
Yeah.
And that sort of, that's what keeps me going, I suppose. You know, my wife says to me, you spend too much time with this. How about your own kids? I said, my kids are provided for. Whatever they want, they get. I said, some of these kids that I train, it's got no direction. No one is looking after them. No one, I mean, I shouldn't say no one is. The parents probably try, but sometimes it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'm a figure that they're terrified of. So they do what I ask them to do. And then eventually they think, hang on, this is good for me, you know? So, you know, I say I'm trying to help people. My wife is true though. I did lose a lot of time with my kids. And that's why I started backing off, because I think I told you in our first conversation, my young son said to me, Dad, I want to come and start training again. And this was when he was 14 years old. And I said, why? He says, oh, no, you don't spend enough time with me, and I want to spend more time with you. I thought, oh, my God, that's what hit me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I started backing off. I mean, you know, years ago, I would have, especially in Knees of Fury, I would have five, six fighters. In fact, the first Knees of Fury, I had 11 fighters in there.
Wow.
All right.
It's almost a full card.
Well, basically
is, yeah.
It was. And, you know, and I do. I train them, you know. But now, people would probably notice, most people would notice that I hardly have any fighters. I got 2, 3, maybe 4 at the moment. That's it.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot of time. Mm. It takes a lot of time. You know, when my son said that to me, I realized, hang on a minute, they've grown up now. I didn't even watch them grow up.
Yeah.
And so that's why I decided to back off of them, because I spend not just lots of time organizing fights for them, not just sort of being with them when they're training. I used to hold pads for every single fighter. I'm the only pad holder. If I had 6 guys fighting, I'm doing 5 rounds each with 6 of them. That's 30 rounds.
Mm.
It takes a big toll on my body, and it shows now, because I can't walk properly because of my knees and my hip. But no regrets, because that's what I chose to do. Obviously, I didn't realize that it would affect me physically, so, you know, towards my twilight years, I suppose. But no regrets, because I enjoyed what I did. I traveled the world as a trainer, you know. I've met lots of good people and lots of bad people, but mostly good trainers from all over the world. And it's fantastic. It's fantastic. Love it. And that's why it's my passion.
How many years has it been now?
Training here or training?
In experience in the industry.
Next year is my 40th year.
Wow.
Running the Flinders Club.
Yep.
I started in 1980.
Yep. Wow.
So, in the fight industry, probably 30 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first 10 years was just Kung Fu and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
30 years.
Wow.
So, you know, like I say, long time,
yeah.
Met lots of people, and enjoyed every minute of it. Not so much now, because I get bored watching fights now, you know?
Yeah.
Because I've watched thousands and thousands of them. And it's just a process of backing down, that's
mm-hmm.
all, you know?
So what's your experience then, having such a long... Yeah, having spent so much time in the industry of back when you first kind of got started and were prepping fighters to now, like how has the industry changed, and what's your viewpoint on that?
Well, the standard has definitely gone up
mm-hmm.
a lot.
Mm-hmm.
People are actually learning more about stuff, and there's still people out there who train people to fight but know nothing about fighting,
mm-hmm.
and that's scary for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's scary for me. And I'm not lying. They are. Of course, you know you don't want to point fingers, but you know, But a lot of trainers these days are starting to understand, I'm talking about Muay Thai here,
mm-hmm.
not general sort of combat sports, yeah? Because I don't follow UFC and stuff like that, so I don't really know much about that industry, but it, as far as Muay Thai is concerned, even kickboxing, people are starting to understand that if they want to go further, they've got to learn from the real experts.
Oh yeah.
Yeah? And a lot of trainers these days are now going to Thailand and trying to learn the real stuff, which is great, all right? It just raised the standards.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are people who are involved in just kickboxing, learning from the Dutch, the K1 style of fighting, and the Dutch are crazy at that. They are just mad when it comes to that, right? So I see a lot of changes in that sense, and it's all about going up, upwards, standard-wise. And that's great. That's great. That's great for the sport in South Australia. I mean, Queensland was way ahead of us. Western Australia was way ahead of us. As far as Muay Thai was concerned, we were above New South Wales and Victoria. But now, even Victoria and New South Wales are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They probably passed us.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to be more competitive in the Australian scene, we better start doing the right thing. And some trainers are, and which is good to see.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you get people like Pinky. You know, Pinky, he's got so much knowledge about Muay Thai, about fighting. People should learn from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people should, you know, like I say, he can be a clown, all right? Some of the things he says, there's no filter. And to me it's funny,
yeah.
But people who doesn't know him think he's an idiot,
yeah.
Right? But he's knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if people are smart, they should really listen to him,
mm-hmm.
and watch how he treats his fighters, watch how he trains his fighters. You know, the problem with some trainers, not all, some, is they seem to think that what they know are secrets.
Mm.
It's no secret.
Mm.
There's nothing secret, nothing secretive about this. If you are prepared to spend 2 months, 3 months, 6 months in Thailand, you would come back with a wealth of knowledge.
Oh yeah.
Yeah? But you have to be prepared to do that. And you have to be prepared to walk in with your minds wide open rather than close it up and think that what you know is better.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Because there's so much other stuff out there. You know, for example, back to when I first started, the way I was taught to kick, the way I was taught to move is so much different from what it is now.
Yeah.
Mind you, the style that I was taught was Southern style, right? From the south of Thailand. And, you know, people look at me and say, that's not Thai boxing, the way you kick. Well, that's how I was taught. And because, like everything else, Thai boxing also evolved, right?
Yeah.
So, and when I went back to Thailand to train for the first time after so many years, I was lost. I was lost because what I knew was not what they're teaching.
Yeah, okay.
So I gotta start learning again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was prepared to learn, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got thrown around like a rag doll by kids that are 20 kilos lighter than me in the clinch. But you learn.
Mm.
You know, you learn. And for us to continue to improve,
yeah,
we have to learn.
Absolutely.
You know? So that's my view.
Beautiful. So I've had the pleasure of training at a wide variety of different gyms and under a wide variety of different coaches, both in Australia and overseas, in Muay Thai, in kickboxing, in, you know, majority of combat sports. And I feel that for me, The benefit of that is that I get to learn a little bit from everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But the downfall of that is also that I pick up, you know, I find I pick up every trainer's kind of those little bad habits.
Yeah.
What's your perspective on cross training or you know, training at other gyms or under varying trainers? Is it something you encourage, or is it something that you sort of...
Well, avoid? How can I put it? I have no problems with people training with or trying to learn from other trainers. But there is a danger there, because what the trainer does might not be, say, the real type of Muay Thai, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, he might know his stuff, but people with different philosophies and different methods can affect a specific fighter,
yep.
for example. Now, I don't mind, like, my guys go and train with Pinky
mm-hmm.
on my off days, like Thursdays and Mondays, that I don't train them. And that's fine, because Pinky and I have the same focus and the same ideas about how someone should train.
Yeah.
All right, I've a few times while we were sparring, and I'm yelling at my guys and say, when you catch a kick, you don't release it. You've got heaps of time to do something. And Pinky turned to me and nod his head and say, that's exactly what I say to other people. So we have the same...
Same style, same process, same method,
right? So in that sense, I have no problems with people training at other gyms.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a different discipline, like boxing, mm-hmm. just plain boxing, great. Because
mm-hmm.
I love my guys that have good hands as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when it comes to, say, things like, you know, maybe I shouldn't generalize things too much, but if you go to another gym which just do kickboxing, the only thing that you would probably learn from them is to do different types of kicks, maybe. You know, Thai boxing is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, round kicks, teep, mm-hmm. push kicks,
mm-hmm.
really, and knees.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, even then, you got different style of different ways of kicking. Yeah. But if the trainer does the same stuff, similar stuff, no problems. Mm-hmm. But something a totally different discipline, yeah, not so good.
Yeah.
That's my view.
Mm-hmm.
Boxing, okay, because it doesn't involve kicking. It's
just
box, yeah?
Yeah.
But when it comes to, you know, it's like a Muay Thai fighter going to a karate club to learn how to kick.
Yeah.
I don't think that will work.
Yeah.
Might give them different sort of views of how to get strong and fit, maybe, mm-hmm. but not in the fighting sense, no.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully that answers your question.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. So someone like Paul Slowinski, who four-time, am I right? Four-time world champion.
Yeah. Yeah.
It shocks me that, and I know that obviously something like Muay Thai isn't a mainstream sport, but it shocks me that there's someone out there who's a four-time world champion and he's not a household name. Why do you think, whether you want to take this from specifically, you know, the viewpoint of looking at Paul, or whether you want to look at the sport as a whole, why do you think it is that it's not something where, you know, these names get widely recognised?
Well, Paul is obviously very well known in the fight community. In Muay Thai, most of the combat sports, people would know who Paul Slowinski is.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, most combat sport, not all, most combat sport is considered a blood sport. And when it comes to blood sport, everyone shies away.
Yeah.
They don't want to know about it. Yeah. See, I was part of the boxing and martial arts advisory committee to the minister, the sports in South Australia. I was in that role for, I think, 12 years. And the lack of understanding in the government level is ridiculous. So when I was there, my role is obviously to try and educate these people, but you can tell talking to some of these guys that they just don't want to know it.
Right?
They've got that, that curtain put in front of them. They look at you, they smile, they nod their head, but you know that they're just not interested because this is not sport. And that's probably why Paul is not a household name, because majority of people just doesn't like that sort of sport. Right now in Thailand it's different. Okay, because the Thais love Muay Thai. Now hang on, let me correct myself. Most Thais love Muay Thai. But there are Thais that just don't like it. They think it's brutal and it's not for humans to do. We don't do that sort of stuff. So even in Thailand you've got that, all right? But majority of Thais, they know the big name fighters because it's in their face. Right? It's mainstream, kind of, right? You've got newspapers that have photos of the Lumpini champions, the Rajadamnern champions, and this bloody fight. So people know them, you know, just by that. And the big problem with us in South Australia is the fight game is not natural for us. All right. Just look at boxing. Now boxing is kind of mainstream because it's been around the Western world for donkey's years, and people know about boxing. Muay Thai, that's not gentlemanly. You kick people. Well, punching people in the face is not gentlemanly either. You know what I mean? So, and you can see the way people think. Just because boxing is more of a Western thing, it's all right to punch people in the face. It's still a gentleman's sport. But when it comes to Muay Thai, where you elbow and kick people in the head, well, that's not gentlemanly. So you've got that, that barrier. And then the other thing is media. We've got no media coverage at all. Now, if, you know, like everything, if you tell people enough times, they will believe it. So if the mainstream media promotes Muay Thai, do lots of stories of fighters and stuff, then people will start to understand and know who these people are. And that's why Paul is not a household name, because we never have those opportunities. That's my view.
How much of that do you think falls on the fighter? Do you think that if fighters promoted themselves more and made, I guess, more of a conscious effort to put themselves out there and promote themselves, that we could start to change that?
That would help. That would help. But not all fighters are so articulate, you know? They just don't have that skill. You know, some fighters are. Are very good at selling themselves. Look at Anthony Mundine. Everyone hates him. And he lives off that. And that's where he makes his money. Because people go buy the ticket to go and watch him fail. So it helps if the fighter promote themselves more. It's a lot easier now with social media and stuff. But in the old days when Paul was fighting, there's nothing like that.
A lot harder.
It's a lot harder.
I think we're
we're very lucky these days that, you know, it really is, it's simple to promote ourselves.
Sure. If
we're willing to.
If you're willing to.
Yeah.
A lot of fighters just...
Yeah, of course.
You know, they don't want to put themselves out there like that.
Yeah.
I suppose it depends, you know, like most fighters here fight for fun.
Mm-hmm.
But not to make a living.
Yeah.
Not many fighters do. Yeah, you know, there are not many fighters thinking, the only fighter that actually can't make a good living out of it is John Wayne Parr.
Mm-hmm.
But then he also has his gym that is that's where his income comes from.
Yeah.
He did make some money from fighting, but if he didn't have a gym and just fight, I don't think he'll be too well off either.
Yeah.
He might do okay, but, you know, I don't think he'll be able to buy a house and run a family with that, because, you know, unless you're getting $200,000 to $500,000 a fight, you know, you do three fights a year, you're a millionaire.
Mm.
You know, like boxing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of these boxing fighters, they get millions of dollars. Only because boxing is more mainstream than Muay Thai.
Mm.
So I have no answer for that.
Mm.
I don't know how we're going to make that happen.
Mm.
But like you say, for a start, maybe the person fighting should promote themselves more. You know, promote themselves to a certain level. Don't make yourself look like a dick. You know?
Yeah.
Be a bit more sensible when you promote yourself, you know?
I find it very intriguing. As you said, you know, I think the mainstream do tend to see combat sports as blood sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even for me, I still get family and friends who haven't spent any time around the industry and believe that it is just violence, you know, just senseless violence.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I've had peers in the past go as far as saying that it's you know, the what was the wording? Everything that was wrong with the world.
Mm.
Which, you know.
And
I mean, this may be slightly irrelevant, but you know, obviously, you know, we're big on the promotion and trying to grow and evolve the industry and make it more mainstream, so that over time it does become a sport where people can make money from it and make a living from it. So I've been doing a lot of research into the gladiatorial games from the Roman Empire.
Right.
And obviously that was heavily a blood sport.
Oh, yeah.
And yet there was so much money in it.
Yeah. Well,
and it amazes me that, I mean, it was back in the day, it was so popular. You know, it was considered the rich man's, you know, the rich man's sport to go and watch. And nowadays, you know, something which is much less violent is there's no money in it.
Yeah.
It shocks me. I mean, obviously a very, very different point in time, but there's a lot of contrast and a lot of similarities in my mind.
It is. I like I said to you when we first met, you know, I wish when Paul was fighting, we had someone like you to have those ideas, and maybe that would have helped a lot more. You know, it's a really tough game.
Mm.
You know. You know, as I said as well, you know, I'm in my twilight years. I shouldn't say twilight years. I've backed off so much from being involved 100% with this that, you know, I wish you came earlier. You know, that might have sort of given me that extra, I don't know, incentive to do more, you know, but one person is not just, it's not the answer. We need more. We need more people with the way you think, even the general public, you know? I think it's also education too. I mean, like you say, fighters promoting themselves, but don't just promote yourself. Educate your friends, educate your family.
Yeah.
You know, explain to them what this is all about. yes, it might look violent, but we are trained to do what we do.
It's high stakes chess.
Yes, really yes, is, of course, of course. I mean, any combat sport is dangerous, okay? Even boxing is so dangerous. People don't see it because it's a long-term thing with boxing, you know? Same as Muay Thai, you know? But if a fighter is smart, give themselves a chance to recover before they move on to the next one, then they've got longevity, you know, to fight once a week, once a fortnight, maybe it's a bit too much, you know, for your body. And when people see that and looking at, you know, a good fighter all of a sudden, you know, become slow in their speech, and then people just said, this is stupid. Why are you doing this to yourself? You know, I think being a smart fighter and being able to educate your friends and family about what you do and what benefits it has for you. Sure, it's got the bad stuff, right? Like hurting yourself and, you know, breaking bones and stuff like that, but that happens in every sport,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it's just a matter of educating people.
Mm.
You know, people say, oh, you guys stand there and belt each other and stuff. Yeah, at least we're looking at each other when we belt each other.
Yeah.
In footy and in rugby, you Ooh. Don't see them coming. They come from the side, give you a big, heavy tackle.
Mm-hmm. Out of the two sports, I mean, I've worked heavily as a sports trainer in football for a number of years. And as a sports trainer, my job was dealing with injuries.
Yeah.
And then, of course, flipping across to combat sports, and that's jiu-jitsu, that's MMA, that's Muay Thai. I got to say, footy is far more dangerous than, you know, the... Well, and I mean, the injuries, I find the injuries we get in combat sports are things like cuts, you know, or... You might get the odd shoulder dislocation or something like that. But in football, it's, you know, knee injuries, which, you know, once happens, it's gone.
Yeah, happens a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't watch footy a lot, but every now and again I might watch a game and you see this guy going up in the air for a mark and then they get hit from the side by someone. Yeah.
The injuries are far more
it's
long-term.
It's terrible. It looks, it's pretty bad. I mean... I used to play rugby, all right, in union, but against smaller guys like me, not against the big Aussie boys. and that is the hits you get from that is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
The jarring to your hips, to your back, when you get tackled, you know, it is, and sometimes. Just getting hit and landing heavily on your head, things like that.
Mm.
It does as much damage as anything, you know, as any combat sport. In fact, more, I would suggest. So,
yeah,
it's so people should sort of, you know, the difference between that, say Aussie rules or rugby league is there's big money involved there. It's nothing in Muay Thai.
Yeah.
Society looks at things differently. You know, people say combat sport is barbaric. Yeah, but at least we're looking at each other, like I say.
I don't think it's any more barbaric than footy or rugby or any of the other sports out there.
So, anyway. It is what it is, you know.
Injuries happen in all sports,
I mean, you know, I only wish that, you know, eventually it becomes something that I don't expect every single person in the world to love this. You know, if we can get 60% of people who thinks this is great, I think that would help a hell of a lot.
Absolutely.
You know,
I think in my experience, fighters tend to all stick together, you know, and they all... We all what's the word, socialize with one another. And, you know, of course, we invite our other, you know, friends within the industry to, to our fights and to the different promotions. But we don't, very rarely do we invite people from outside of the industry, you know, unless it's family. But we don't, you know, we, how often do we see fighters inviting footballers or, I don't know, BMX riders or whatever it may be to come check out these fights? And I think, I know you said you don't follow the UFC much, but that's what I'm witnessing in the UFC, where they do have these other sports and, you know, they have Hollywood actors and they have singers. And they constantly have, you know, people from all different industries come in. And so, of course, it very quickly is beginning to become more and more mainstream. I'm led to believe that MMA is the fastest growing sport in the world currently.
It is. It is.
And I think maybe that's where Muay Thai and K1 are a bit behind. We're keeping to ourselves and we're staying within the box rather than looking outside of that.
And to add to that, there's a lot of money in UFC.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of money. And they can afford to go to this famous ice hockey player and say, hey, I've got a front row seat for you. Come and enjoy tonight. Everything's on us. But we don't have that opportunity, right?
Yeah. I think though, I mean, the podcast, I don't make a dollar from the podcast. And I think sometimes it's just reaching out. I mean, I've had huge names, you know, in a wide variety of industries join me on the show. And it's just, you know, when you explain the mission and the vision and the meaning behind it, then they get behind it, not because they're going to earn money from it. I mean, we don't do any sort of paid interviews or any of that. We don't, you know, pay our guests to be on. I think they just want to get behind a good cause, you know? And so I think if we can just be willing to reach out and potentially be rejected, you know, to be willing to reach out to these individuals, whether they're big names or not, just to help, you know,
get the name out there. And that's education, right?
Yeah,
you educate people, you know? I mean, like I said that because when there's big money involved, it's easier
to
attract these people, you know?
Yeah.
I suppose beautiful people attract beautiful people, okay? And, like, for example, I went to Sweden with Paul for his world title fight against Jürgen Krutz. And we were taken to this bar, and everyone in the bar, they're superstars, ice hockey and soccer players. And, you know, it's like, wow, look, they have this sort of stuff here, you know? And we were little kickboxers, you know? So yeah, and we need that sort of exposure. We need to walk into a bar like that sports, that type of sports bar, and say, "I'm a world champion." People needs to know.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it needs a lot more work from everyone, promoters of the sport, the sanctioning bodies, the peak bodies of Muay Thai, you know, individuals like you, all the trainers. Don't keep to yourself, you know. Don't only sort of socialize with your, you know, that sort of stuff. You know, you just need to open up a little bit more. I mean, I'm guilty of that. You know, I'm guilty of that, that I stick to my own.
I think we all
world.
Are in a way.
Yeah.
I've been guilty of it.
Yeah, so, you know, but it's good to talk to you who has different ideas and you see the benefits of it. Man, you know, some I'm very old school. Some things I might not agree with, but hey, it's always good to have fresh ideas.
Absolutely.
You know? So,
Yeah, I think you nailed it when you said, I think you said earlier about being open-minded. I don't think it always needs to come down to agree or disagree. It's
Just
take what
just be open-minded and listen.
Take what you align with and leave the rest. And,
yeah, that's it, exactly. And if you believe in certain stuff, great.
Yeah.
If you don't, you don't.
Exactly.
You don't know one's going to force it down your throat.
Yeah.
You know, open-mindedness is very important. Definitely. And I am. And I am. People think that I'm not, might not be, but I am. In the old days, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, in the old days, my way or no way, you know?
Yeah.
But these days, you know, I do understand people have different outlook, you know? People have different goals, you know? Not everyone achieve a certain goal the way you do.
Mm-hmm.
People might take an extra 2 or 3 steps.
Yeah.
To do it, so I've over the years I've learned to be a little bit more open-minded. You know, I mean, if you speak to my students from 30 years ago, they'll laugh at this guy's here. You think you get it hard? Wait, you know, you should have been with us 30 years ago. You know. So you know, and I still have another of my ex-fighters, his name is it's an Irish kid, Paul Fitzsimmons. We still talk. He lives in England now. And the other day I wrote a little rant about, you know, people being what can I say, thinking that they've been hard done by, you know, because I'm hard on them, I yell at them too much. And he came out and said, "These little pussies, what do they think they know? They know nothing compared to what you were 30 years ago, you know?" And then that's quite true. You know, a lot of the, like recently I had a photo session for our 40th year thing. Mel came up to take some photos for us.
Yep.
And I invited everyone from the past. Not everyone turned up, you know. A lot of people didn't even get that message. But a few of the guys came, and some of them are from 25 years ago.
Mm.
And, you know, they say exactly the same thing. You guys are lucky. You guys, you know, in our days, we get grilled for every single thing we make a mistake on. So, you know, but I want to be a bit kinder now, you know, getting too old, got to mellow out a little bit, so anyway.
Perfect.
Okay.
I could sit and pick your brain forever, but I am mindful of time. I know tonight's your night off.
That's fine. No problems.
Social media, do you have any kind of links or anything that you want to point the listeners in the direction of? Or if they want to come and train here with you, where can they find you?
Well, my number is published in on our website, which is www.flindersmuaythai.com.au.
Perfect.
So my phone number is there, and social media, we have a public group called just Flinders University Muay Thai Club. So just type in FUMTC, you'll find it, and there should be phone numbers there, and you know, lots of photos and videos and stuff. Have a look, you know, if you're interested, you're welcome to train with us. You know, for us, all we do is we train in a basketball court, and no boxing ring, no bags hung up all the time, but we give you good hard training. That's all I can say.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
No problems.
It's been a real pleasure to pick your brain, given how much experience you've got. So yeah.
Well, I hope I'm clear about, you know, what I've said, and clear about who I am, and there was a bit of history in the conversation, and so. Yeah, hopefully it gives people a little bit more insight into what I do and who I am, I suppose.
Absolutely.
And hopefully it helps the sport grow a bit so people understand that I'm not a bastard after all. You know?
Perfect. All right. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
So there we have it. Another episode down the hatch. Cha-ching. Now, as always, standard procedure. For those of you who want to know a little bit more about what I'm up to in the world, we got a whole lot of shebang-a-bang going on. Of course, you can check out my personal journey and kind of the hub, I suppose, of all things that I'm up to via Facebook at facebook.com/Brianna Bowley Coach or on Instagram at instagram.com/Brianna Bowley. And of course, if you want to stay up to date with anything the Live Free group concerned, we've got the Live Free Academy, our educational platform, www.thelivefreeacademy.com.au. Mm-hmm, don't forget the .au. Or you can email us directly at hello@thelivefreeacademy.com.au. Of course, on Facebook and Instagram as well. If you want to know a little bit more about the Live Free movement and our coaching and consulting for peak performance and optimization, they can be one-on-one coaching or group coaching if you're with a team or an organization or a company. You can find out all the details at facebook.com/thelivefreemovement or instagram.com/thelivefreemovement, or just hit us up directly. You know, we're always down for a good chit chat. And finally, if you want to just follow along with the podcast, The Live Free Experience, you can do so by searching The Live Free Experience on both Facebook and Instagram. And if you're enjoying the content we're putting out, please, I urge you, like it, share it, comment, tag your buddies, and jump over onto iTunes and leave us a sick review. And until next time, what else is possible?